Hello, and welcome to the Cosmic Shed. It's just me, Andrew, in the shed today. As you can probably hear, it's a windy evening here in Bristol, and it's also a very starry night. And today's episode is all about TRAPPIST-1. If you don't know what that is, I don't know what you've been doing, because it is 7 Earth-sized planets orbiting a star just 40 light-years from Earth, announced this week by NASA. And today I had the opportunity to speak to Michael Guillon. He says his name in a minute in a proper French accent or Belgian accent. He's the lead scientist on the TRAPPIST project, which found and identified these planets. And as you'll hear, he is, like us, a science fiction fan, and it was a real pleasure to talk to him. There are just a couple of things that he talks about which require a little bit of prior knowledge. One is Speculos, or Speculus. The star is called TRAPPIST-1 because it is the first catalogue star of the TRAPPIST telescope, and the TRAPPIST telescope is so named because of the astronomer's love of TRAPPIST beers. And Speculos is the next project along the line after TRAPPIST, and it stands for the Search for Habitable Planets Eclipsing Ultra-Cool Stars. And TRAPPIST-1 is one of those ultra-cool stars. And the other thing just to mention is that when he says HST, he simply means the Hubble Space Telescope. The James Webb Space Telescope we've talked about before, that's the space telescope that's being launched in 2018 to follow on from the work that Hubble's been doing. A bigger, better Hubble, really. I'm really sorry that we haven't had an episode of the Cosmic Shed for a while. The truth of it is, we went to see Passengers and couldn't really face doing an episode on it for one reason or another. If you've seen it, you'll probably know what I mean by that. And the other reason is that I've been busy making podcasts for Physics World, the publishing arm of the Institute of Physics. January episode was on the most mind-blowing topic, radioactive diamond batteries. And if your response to the words radioactive diamond batteries is as mine was, then you'll probably want to check out that episode, which I'll post a link to on the Cosmic Shed website. We're about to release the March episode of the Physics World podcast. That's going to be all about neutrinos. And I'm about to embark on recording the April episode, which is all about TRAPPIST-1 and the 7 exoplanets around it, which brings me nicely back to this interview. I hope you enjoy it. And I began by asking him what exactly it was that they'd done.
Okay, so I'm Michael Guillon. I'm an astronomer at the University of Liège, Belgium. I'm leading the TRAPPIST and Speculos exoplanet searches. So what we have done is to search for planets passing in front of stars. What we measure is the brightness of the star, and when a planet passes in front, you have a drop of brightness. So this is the transit. And so we target with our project the smallest stars in the solar neighborhood, because these are the only ones for which we would be able to characterize in detail an Earth-sized exoplanet, especially a potentially habitable one. Because for larger stars, the signal from the planet would be too much diluted by the light of the star, and we wouldn't be able to see anything with current technology. So if you want to study a potentially habitable planet, you have really to focus on small stars, and especially these ultra-cool dwarf stars, which are the smallest kind of stars. And so we have started a prototype survey, a prototype program, in 2011, with our robotic telescope TRAPPIST, which is located in Chile. And we have monitored something like 30 stars searching for transits. And in 2015, we had the chance to see a transit signal on one of them, and it was TRAPPIST-1. And so we detected one planet, two planets, then we had a third planet showing up, and we published this in May 2016 in Nature. We published the discovery of the three planets. But we had a problem with the third one because we didn't know exactly its orbital period. We had only two transits. The precision was not good, and we had indication in our data of over-transit of over-planets. So we intensified the observation of the system. First, with ground-based telescopes, including TRAPPIST, but other telescopes too. And at some point, we had so many transits that we could not make sense of all these signals. And it was clear that we wouldn't be able to crack the system with so many planets if we had a continuous observation from space. Because from the ground, you're always limited by the weather, by the day and night cycle, and so on. So we asked NASA to access the Spitzer Space Telescope for 3 weeks in a row. We had the data taken in fall, so September, October, and they showed an amazing collection of transits of signals of planets. There were 34 transits of planets, all of them more or less of the size of the Earth, because we know the size thanks to the drop of brightness amplitude. And we could really crack the system. We could be sure of our solutions. There were seven planets, all the seven being temperate in the sense that they are far enough from the star, and the star is cold enough to make possible, at least on a fraction of the surface, liquid water, in theory. In practice, we don't know, because it really depends on the atmospheric composition, the composition of the planet. We have no idea of this so far, but they are very interesting in terms of search for habitable conditions. And also, these planets are well suited for detailed study of the atmosphere. Really, the first one was very exciting. Already one planet was exciting. Now we have a full collection of planets. Three of them are in the habitable zone, where liquid water is the most likely to exist. We have planets inner to the habitable zone, one which is outer to the habitable zone. So we have really a wonderful sample of planets that we will be able to study in great detail now already with the Hubble Space Telescope, Spitzer, ground-based telescope, but also especially with the James Webb telescope that is going to be launched in 2018, so not so far in the future. And so within the next month and within the next year, we will learn much more about the system, about these planets, and this will be the first exploration of terrestrial planets outside our solar system. And what we will discover, I have no idea, no remote idea. But this is what is fun. This is that it's really a completely virgin territory, terra incognita we are exploring, and we'll see what we get.
Yeah, amazing. Is it? So you said you asked NASA to use their Spitzer Space Telescope. Is that something you do on a weekly basis, or is this, you know, kind of...
I do it often, because the Spitzer Space Telescope is really unique in the sense that, first of all, it is an infrared telescope, so it's very well suited to observe very cool objects that emit most of their light in the infrared, like this TRAPPIST-1 ultra-cool dwarf. And furthermore, it can observe, it's very far from Earth, it's orbiting the Sun and not the Earth, and so it can observe a star continuously for days, weeks, even months for some. Well, from if you have a space telescope like HST, which is orbiting the Earth, you are always limited, because at some point the star will be hidden by the Earth, and you have just chunk of data, of observations. So it's frustrating to not be able to follow the star continuously. With Spitzer, you can do it, which is quite unique. So It makes really this facility unique for observing and searching for transits.
And you ask them often, do they always say yes?
No, not always, no. Yeah. No. It depends. What you have to do is to make a proposal, a scientific proposal, that is submitted to a panel of experts, of scientists, that will decide, is it really interesting or not? And it will also depend on the other proposals that are submitted. So they are in competition between each other, and at the end, you're never sure that you will win, of course. So,
but you must have been a little bit sure with this one.
Yes, I was definitely sure. We asked for 1,000 hours of observation, 3 weeks in a row, and then plenty of observation of the transits. And I would have bet that it would have been accepted, because the system is so unique. I don't know how you could say no to such a request.
Yeah, completely. At what point was it that you sort of became most excited about it?
At some point, we realized that we had not only planets, but some of them must have been in the habitable zone. So the two first planets were a bit frustrating because they were temperate, but not in the habitable zone, which means that they could have liquid water only in a full, on a fraction of the surface, and with very specific atmospheric conditions. So it was not very likely that they were habitable. Now we had the planet which were farther from the star in the habitable zone, and then it really became completely crazy because we had not one, but two, three in the habitable zone. So it was the first time we had so many planets in the habitable zone around the star, and all of them amenable for detailed study. So this is when it became really crazy. The largest time of excitement, I think, it's when I saw the Lycurgus of Spitzer with all this transit. And there were two more planets we didn't even know about them. We had not detected them in the ground-based data because they were smaller. And so it made seven Earth-sized planets. It was just completely crazy. So we were really, really excited.
Yeah.
I was working with two friends which were on Skype. And we made a kind of celebration, a remote celebration for this, because we couldn't believe what we had in front of the eyes. It was just pure magic.
There's that moment where you discover it. How long is it between that and this announcement from NASA?
It's 3 months. So then we had to make the analysis of all our data, then prepare a paper presenting our results, submit it to Nature, and it takes time that it's reviewed by over scientists, and then you have to prepare the video conference, and the press conference. It took also some time for NASA to prepare the graphical work and so on. So all this nice support to the discovery. So at the end, it was quite fast. 3 months is not so much.
Yeah, but we
worked a lot to make this happen.
I knew like 24 hours before it was announced, and I couldn't say anything, and it was an absolute nightmare for 24 hours because I wanted to talk to everyone about it. You had 3 months of that.
Yes, it was really hard to keep this secret, and furthermore, I had to make presentations of TROPICS-1 when I were discussing the previous results, and I had to hide the new ones.
Yeah.
So I was presenting the system as we knew it before. Well, I knew that it was much more exciting. So it was frustrating indeed.
Yeah, okay. So have you got names for them? You've got names for the planets, the kind of, you know, the scientific names. Have you got other names for them?
Yes, we have beer names.
Okay.
TROPICS is a reference to the TROPICS beers. So we have named them following the TROPICS beers. There are six breweries in Belgium that make TROPICS beers, which are Akel, Westmal, West Vleteren, Chimay, Orval, and Rochefort. And also for the seventh, we have decided to use the US beer, which is US Trappist beer. There is only one, which is Spencer. And we have decided to use it because it's Spitzer, that is a US telescope that allowed us to crack the system. So that this is how we call the planets internally.
So it's an international effort as well to find them, isn't it? It's not just you guys.
Yeah, so the team behind this, it's the original TROPICS team from Belgium. Also, we have people that are in the Speculoos project, for which TROPICS is a prototype. So there are people from Cambridge University also. For the habitability and so on, we need some experts to study to make some prediction about the atmospheric composition and so on. So we work with people from Bordeaux in France. We included also people from the Spitzer Science Center, Sean Carey, Jim Singers, people from related to the different telescope from the ground that made the observations. So at the end, it's a very big team. It was completely led by the University of Liège in Belgium, but the team itself includes plenty of astronomers from different countries.
Great. Do you feel that the media kind of overhype some exoplanet discoveries, and it's sort of another Earth every time?
Yes, I think so, and especially when it's near the habitable zone or within the habitable zone, it's always presented like a kind of Earth 2. Well, we have no idea, no remote idea of, even for planets we have, don't have the mass, the radius, and we're not even sure they exist. They were not confirmed. It's just because they are in the habitable zone. Poof, here is another Earth. And at the end, it's counterproductive for us, because when you have, like here, planets that are in the habitable zone and that are well-suited for detailed study, some people tell me, but we already have plenty of them. That's not true. You have detection of planets, but you can't study them. Here you have a system you can study in detail. That's a major step forward. But generally, the article and the presentation of the facts are good. It's only a few that go maybe beyond the facts and enter into the realm of speculation and science fiction sometimes.
Okay. Are you a science fiction fan?
Yes.
Okay.
I like science fiction for not only for the fun part, but also from feeding my motivation also. And sometimes in science, you can have some frustrating times when you have no result and you search, you have nothing. And it's good to get back to, I would say, the magical aspect of the things that you do. You're observing the stars and searching for life elsewhere. So it's good to have some imaginative part to feed your interest when it's becoming a bit more difficult, and to keep the motivation, and also to have some views about what could be an exoplanet, for instance, or aliens and so on, that come from another mind. And just to have some ideas and some visions that are completely different. And this is what I like. It's really entering a new universe and seeing what we could discover maybe later, or how we could evolve and so on. So it's really something that I like a lot.
Great. So what would you turn to then if you've had a frustrating day at work, nothing's happening, all the stars are just boring old stars with boring old planets around them. What do you pick up? Is it a book? Do you pick up the remote control and watch Star Trek? What do you do?
I don't like so much movies or series. I much prefer the books, especially art, science fiction, like Alastair Reynolds, for instance, Peter Watts, or classics like Clark or Isaac Asimov, and this kind of book where you're not so far from reality. You're not making a hyperspace jump without any physical foundation. You're just in a possible future, and I feel that it could be the future, and that it's still realistic at some point. And this is where my imagination is better at its, well, when I feel better. If it's really too far from science and it's becoming more fantasy, I don't like it so much. So
okay.
Star Trek and Star Wars and so on, okay, it's fun, but you don't believe in this at all. It's just so too far from science. So
okay, fair enough. But if you, just to engage that imagination a little bit, imagine you were standing on one of these planets. Which one do you pick and what do you imagine you see?
Well, this system is really amazing because the planets are so close to each other that you would see the other planets from the surface of any of these planets, like we see the moon. So you would see the continents, oceans, whatever, and not just dots of light. You would really see them, and you would see them pass in the sky. It would be just amazing, and several of them.
Yeah, amazing.
And the sun wouldn't change its position. The star would remain in its position, just because the planets are tidally locked, which means that by the tidal influence of the star, they would be trapped in a rotation which is synchronous with the orbit, just like the moon to the Earth.
So is one part of the planet is facing the star for all of the planets?
Yes, okay. Very likely.
Okay. How do you know that they're tidally locked? What's the process there?
It's only by theory. We don't know. We don't have measures of that they're tidally locked. We could have this with James Webb, but the tidal influence of massive bodies is very well understood from a theoretical point of view. And from what we observe in the solar system, it works. I mean, the moon is well tidally locked to the Earth. The moons of Jupiter or Saturn are tidally locked. Even for Pluto and Charon, they are tidally locked too, both of them. We don't think that we are completely wrong on this. It's very likely they are tidal developed. But who knows? Who knows?
And does that have impact for possibility of life?
Well, you would have, for photosynthesis, you would have a life that would develop more on the day side. But from the perspective of liquid water and habitable condition, you could have on both sides. Just because you have the atmosphere that brings the heat from the day side to the night side quite efficiently. So you just would just have a phase which is perfect for astronomy, because it would be always dark.
Yeah.
And another phase which is always day, perfect for growing things and so on.
Yeah.
So it must be a fun place.
Yeah. Wow, that's really amazing. And how long would it take to get between the planets? Do you have an idea of that?
It's only a few times the distance between Earth and the Moon. So it would take a few days.
Okay. From one planet to another, you can go for like a week's holiday to another planet.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah, that would be... It's really... This system is out of science fiction, I would say.
Yeah, completely. And it they're warmer than Earth, slightly warmer and darker, is that right?
We have no idea of the surface conditions. It really depends on the atmosphere. The two innermost planets are probably not very habitable. You could have maybe some liquid water and a fraction, but for most of the surface, if you have a good atmosphere, a dense atmosphere, it would be kind of Venus-like. It should be very, very hot on the surface. Furthermore, we expect some large volcanism on these two planets, because they are very close to the star, so they must be deformed by the tides and release energy through friction by volcanism. So more like kind of super Io, I don't know if you know Io, the moon of Jupiter,
mm-hmm.
then or mixed between Io and Venus than the Earth. So not so great for life. The others, they could have large fraction of the surface with liquid water, and even the fringy habitable zone could be completely like Earth, in the sense that you could have temperature which are similar to the one on the Earth. You would just have a phase which is a bit cooler than a phase a bit hotter, but the difference in temperature could be something like 20 degrees Celsius, so maybe 10 degrees. It really depends on the atmospheric density and composition. So you could have anything in terms of surface conditions.
Okay.
On the other side, it could be atmosphereless rocks without any atmosphere, without any water, without nothing. So we don't know. What is great is that we will know eventually what they are made of and what are the surface conditions. Because when we will have a very thorough characterization of the atmosphere, we will know how the conditions on the surface of this planet.
And we have to wait for James Webb for that?
Yes.
Okay. And what can we find out now? What will we find out in the next month?
We're going to measure much more precisely the masses of the planet, thanks to new observation, notably with Kepler, the Kepler telescope, and Spitzer. And with the masses, as we have the radius, which is well determined, we will know the density, so we will be able to say these planets are made of rocks, or these planets are richer in ice than the Earth, and more like mega version, maxi version of Europa, the moon of Jupiter, the famous moon which is full of ice.
Yeah.
We would be able to detect very extended atmosphere of hydrogen, which is very unlikely, but at the end, we should be able, within 1 or 2 years, to have an estimation of the extent of the atmosphere with Hubble. We could be able to detect more planets or so, because why not 8 or 9?
Okay, right.
We will also learn a lot about the irradiation of the planet in terms of X-ray, in terms of UV, the variation of the activity of the star, and we should be able to get some theoretical constraint on how it impacts the atmosphere of the planets. But it is really when we will study the atmosphere in detail that we will go beyond the theoretical speculation and we will move towards reality. Yeah? Because theory is great, but it's often wrong when you don't have any data. Yeah. And when you get the data, then you see that, okay, my theory was completely wrong, or that I missed completely some point. So at the end, it will be really with James Webb that we will get really a good view of what is happening on this planet, what are they made of, and what are their surface conditions. And if we detect, for instance, dense atmosphere, and that we are pretty sure that the winds from the star are strong, we should conclude that there is a magnetosphere protecting the atmosphere of the planet, because else it would be eroded very quickly. So at the end, we should have a very thorough understanding of this system. But it will begin with few steps, the masses of the planet, first traces of the atmosphere, and then it will accelerate with James Webb toward a complete understanding within 5 to 10 years. And maybe the detection of biosignatures on one of these planets.
Okay.
Wow. Which could be fun.
Yeah, amazing. What else is hiding in the data? What are you not telling me?
We don't have any indication. If this is what you ask, we don't have any indication of a moon or something like this, of another planet. We just know it's possible, but we don't have any clear indication. We're not hiding anything of the system so far.
Okay, fair enough. And have you got other systems that you're going to be announcing soon?
We have our project Speculoos that is going to start this year from Paraná. We expect to have more detections maybe this year. We have another system that looks interesting, but we have no confirmation so far. So I would say it's possible we have something coming in before the end of the year. But with Speculoos, it will accelerate, and we should have many more detections from next year.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure for me too.
I hope you enjoyed that, and we'll be back very soon with an episode on Hidden Figures, which, if you haven't seen it, get to the cinema now and see it. It is a wonderful, wonderful film, and thank you very much for listening.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.